You are listening to the Mick and Mac GAA Football Podcast.
Okay, hello and welcome back to the Mick and Mac GAA Football Podcast. We have Ross Traynor again with me today. Ross, how are you, fella?
I'm not too bad, Mick. Are you keeping well?
I'm good. Yeah, we're just talking about the rotten weather we're having. Not great, but sure, what can we do? And also delighted to be joined by London senior football manager Michael Maher. Michael, thanks for joining us.
No problem, lads. Hope you're both keeping well. Thanks for inviting me on.
No, thank you for coming on. I suppose, Michael, tell us about life in London at the moment. How's it been for the last few months?
Very different. Very, very different. I guess, look, things are getting a bit back to normal now, kind of between 9 to 5, but then 5 o'clock comes and things are still shut. There's very little to do kind of outside of work. Sport is gradually coming back, I guess, in individual circumstances like golf, tennis. You can meet small groups for exercise, but kind of restaurants, bars, all still shut, cinemas, theatres, everything that kind of would be the highlight to people's weekends and life outside of work is still kind of down. So it's very, very strange, but it's been a strange few months. But hopefully we're coming out the other side slowly but surely.
Yeah, fingers crossed. And you're teaching. Are you back teaching the last few weeks?
Yeah, schools are starting to open up. Schools aren't open full time yet. Like there's weeks where they have cleaning days. So the school I'm in today was being deep cleaned. There's a lot to it, but I think it'll be a while before schools are back lock, stock and barrel with kind of a full quota of children. But a lot of parents are still wary about sending their children in here, and probably understandably so. So it is quiet. It's very, very different. And even kind of in the schools at the moment, the education is different to what it usually would be. So it's different, but teachers, I guess, haven't stopped working. Like they've still been facilitating online lessons for kids all the way through. So, look, the sooner we can get kids back to school, I'm a great believer in education being a good place for kids to be, the better. But things are slowly coming back to life.
Absolutely. I read before that you're teaching in one of the toughest areas in London. I mean, so well, what sort of challenges would you face there? And also, would sport be really important in areas like that?
Oh, it's huge. I'm a firm believer that sport can really play a positive influence in a young person's life. I was lucky enough to start working for St Paul's Academy when Pat Winston was the head teacher. And Pat did so much for that school in terms of giving kids opportunities, not just through sport, but through so many different other avenues. But sport was a main driver there. So with Gaelic football, every year we'd have taken the kids to Ireland on a week-long tour in May. And then the crux of the South London Failure team would have been formed from St Paul's Academy School, plus another couple of kids from Thomas McEwan's club and Round Towers club. But sport is so important. Like, and I know firsthand some of the kids we've had, they're challenging characters, but giving them an outlet on a Tuesday, Thursday night, on a weekend, and something to focus on is so, so crucial to kind of keeping them off street corners. But there were so many success stories we've had, but there have also been kids that have fallen by the wayside, I guess, as time goes on. But sport is massive, and that's why the sooner schools are open and we can get kids back engaged playing sport, be it in school or outside of school, the better.
Yeah. And talk to us about that gang culture in South London. I mean, you're dealing with it every day. Is it a huge issue?
It definitely is. Obviously, at the minute, things are a lot quieter. I think that there's less chance for gangs to be as prominent, but like, it is a huge thing. And social media is, I think, to blame for a lot of it. Kids kind of, they feel like they have to act in a certain way to be respected in certain areas of London. But it certainly is. Like, we've known of kids before who, when they're not with us, they're potentially kind of hanging around with the wrong character. So just going back to it, if there's something else for kids to realise they've got to focus on, and that's where the trips to Ireland always just open kids' eyes. Like, we had kids in Ireland that had never been outside of London or their estate. There were kids as naive to, I don't know, thing that we had a kid in Ireland once, probably one of the funniest things I ever heard, and we drove past a field of cows and he thought they were a field of horses. Like, that was how kind of, yeah, like how unaware of life some of these guys are inside in London. It's just the circumstances they find themselves in. It's probably not by choice. And it's easier to fall into the gang culture than it is to try and do something positive for their life. So look, we're really, really proud of the fact that we have been able to keep a number of guys on the straight and narrow. And hopefully now next year, we will have a few of the South London boys that have come through and out of a tough era. They'll be trying them with us probably at the back end of this season, looking to see where they are for next year's National League campaign.
Okay. And I mean, I just want to touch on something there. Obviously, you've had great success with St. Paul's and obviously your Fela teams. And I was reading also you'd have in the school, there's a lot of Portuguese and African nationals in it. And obviously, racism has been a huge issue at the moment. Obviously, in America and just sports in general. Would that be something you'd come across a lot in your time coaching?
We had come across it, but it was, if you compared the times we came across it to the times we didn't, it was in the very, very, very small minority. So we were always welcomed with open arms to clubs in Ireland. Clubs were always very, very good to us. But of course, you're always going to come across one or two people that have different views, probably uneducated views. But the way I always saw it, it only ever happened when we were beating another team who may have been expecting to beat us. So we were in the failure and we were playing a team from a very, very traditional footballing county. We were beating them well, and that's when a few silly comments were chucked in. The tough thing is to try and get the kids back on side quickly and make them realise that, like, it's just someone's throwaway comment. It's a jealous comment. And actually, there is no truth behind what they're saying at all. So we've had comments like, oh, you shouldn't be playing here. You shouldn't be playing Gaelic football. And actually, them kids have every right to play Gaelic football as much as a kid born in Ireland. So their throwaway comments, we were always very, very well treated in the majority. But I think in every walk of life, whatever sport you're playing, you're always going to get someone who's got silly views, and you've just got to kind of get over that quickly.
And I mean, that failure success I was reading about is amazing. Like Division 5 up to the final, Division 1, beating teams like Carrafin and Austin Stacks, am I right in saying, along the way? I mean, yeah. What's the secret to that success?
Do you know what? It was just a collective. We had a collective group of people that had a vision to give these kids an opportunity. I guess, look, it goes back to 2007. When I was growing up and you played for London in the Fela, London's a big, big city, and size-wise it might compare to counties at home in Ireland, but the travel here is just a problem. So there was a group of people who said, look, having just one London Fela team is tough, because kids traditionally from South or East London weren't getting the opportunities, because to get a kid from South London up to where the trials were being held was nearly impossible. So the South London team was formed purely just to give kids more opportunity to be part of that Fela experience. So that started in 2007, and it was Pat Winston who was driving the thing as the head teacher of St. Paul's Academy, but there were three clubs involved, Roundtowers, Thomas McCurtain's, and then Dulwich Harps, which is St. Paul's Academy. And kind of, we went back that first year, and we got to the quarterfinals. It was structured slightly differently, but we did so well with minimal preparation time, because it had been a quick turnaround that year. And kind of from the following year onwards, we got to the final in 2008 and got beaten by Dungarvan, if I'm right, in Breffni Park. And kind of from there, we just realised, look, if we focus on this and we kind of put a blueprint in place from younger ages, we could have these guys ready at 14 to go and compete on this national stage. So Pat then put in a place, a programme in the primary schools that feed into St Paul's Academy. And Martin McGrath and myself would have been kind of heading that side of things up, going into primary schools, doing all different sports throughout the year with the kids. And we were exposing the kids that were coming to St Paul's to Gaelic football. By the time they were 11, 12, and into school, they'd had 3 or 4 years of real emphasis winning, being important at that stage. 11 and 12, 13, they obviously started to play for Dulwich Harps in club competitions in London. And we just found that a few years into the process, 2010 onwards, the kids, when they got to 13, they were ready. They had everything they needed. Their skill development was to a really, really high level. They were confident in kind of the team play. They started to understand the importance of winning. But most of all, they were a team. They'd been playing together for a few years. They lived and breathed in each other's spaces. And I guess we were as close to a traditional team in Ireland as you'd find, because the kids were at school together every day. So they had each other's backs to a sense. But it really was Pat Winston, was the driver of it. Martin McGrath, myself, Michael Donnelly, and Brian Smith, who's moved back to Westmeath now. We just had a group of lads there that were committed to the cause. We gave the kids the opportunity, but the kids would have to take all the credit. They're absolutely brilliant. But if you said to me in 2007, when we landed into Feeney, you'll be playing in the Division One final in 2019, I laughed. Yeah, I said, no way. But it was, look, it was an unbelievable experience. Last year was my last year doing it. And like, we got blown away in the first half by Kilmacud Croaks. And I think there was a bit of stage fright from the boys because it was a huge crowd. It was a huge occasion. I think they realised what it meant to them. But the second half, we gave them a fright. Like, we came out in the second half and scored 3-3 within 6 or 7 minutes, like playing up the hill and into a wind. And we had them on the racks, but they got another goal and that kind of just sealed it. But it would have been an unbelievable fairy tale to win that last year. But we did, like you said, we beat Corriffin, we beat Austin Stacks. Along the way, we played some huge teams the last few years, but it was an unbelievable experience. And the hope now is we can get some of those guys through from both the North London and the South London Failure teams to continue playing on into their late teens and early 20s and get them onto the London senior team.
Some going, like, brilliant. And is it growing as a sport with kids, like, of the non-Irish nationals as well? Will there be a lot of non-Irish nationals playing at the moment?
There's a hell of a lot more to when I was growing up, it would have been mainly second generation Irish kids because it wasn't kind of being fed out into the schools. It was just parents of Irish background finding out there was a Gaelic football team taking the kids. Whereas now kind of it's been in the schools for the last number of years. Good work's been done by Lloyd Colfer and Gavin Watchorn in that respect. And they're opening the doors to kids of any background to play the game. So I do think they're playing it. So I don't think it was ever the case that kids of different backgrounds weren't welcome. It was just they didn't know about the sport, whereas they do know about it now. And I love it. I think it's a great summer sport, and the way it falls over here, it doesn't clash with soccer and rugby season, so it can be a kid's first sport in the summer.
And Michael, tell us about your background. I mean, tell us about your Irish background. Your father's from Kilkenny, am I right in saying?
My father's Kilkenny, yeah, and my mum's parents were from Cork and Kerry, so from the age of probably one, I had a hurley in my hand, a Gaelic football on my feet. And you had no choice. And I guess I played for Roundhouse Football Club from the age of 7 or 8, and sure, worked for both clubs. He was on the county board, the youth boards for a long time as well. So he was a real prominent figure, and I guess I always looked up to him in that respect, and wanted to always give something back when I got to the right age to be able to give something back. But I think it would have been easy to drop away had I not had a parent involved at the same time, because when you get to the age of 14, 15 in London, the amount of games just drop off drastically. Like, I think I played 5 or 6 games between the age of 16 to 21 for the club. It was something very, very small. So had you not had a parent there kind of keeping you involved, dragging you down to the pitch to train with the seniors, whatever it might have been, you could have easily dropped away. And a lot of lads of my age group did fall away from the game because they didn't have parents that would have been kind of egging them to stay involved. So, look, Dad was a hugely, hugely important factor in me staying involved in the game. But growing up with two parents with an Irish background, I was very, very lucky to be able to get involved in two Irish sports from a young age.
And did you get back over to Ireland much? Or was it every summer? Or was it as regular as
that? We would have gone on holiday every summer. And then with the clubs, Round Towers as a club, we used to go on trips to Ireland every 2 years. And then, obviously, I played for London in both hurling and football failures. Dad was actually the hurling failure manager. And that was, I guess, my first real experience of hurling at a high level. We got to the final. It was Casement Park, actually. It was an unbelievable occasion. And we lost the Division 4 hurling final to a team from Monaghan. It was heartbreaking. I probably cried for 2 days afterwards. But it was just an unbelievable occasion to do that with your dad. And we had a ridiculously good team that year as well. But that was kind of the first time I stopped and thought, like, this is the sport, and like Gaelic games is what I want to be involved in. I just loved everything it stood for from a young age. And I guess that was kind of a real important moment in my life growing up.
What did your friends who would have no Irish background think of you with a hurl and an O'Neill's at your feet? Were they looking at you like you 10 heads, or were they more interested when, to see what you're
when
doing?
You was, when you'd be talking to people at the weekend, they said, what are you doing this weekend? I'm playing Gaelic football or hurling. Some of the comments would have been, what the hell are you doing that for? Like, you're mad. But it was just, it was my normal and it was their abnormal. So I actually convinced one of my best friends at the time to come and play in goal for us for a few games. And like afterwards, he loved it. He actually really enjoyed playing. But it wasn't kind of a done thing then to just join a Gaelic football club or a hurling club, like I said, if you weren't of a kind of a, of an Irish background. So it was slightly different to what it is now. It's way more diverse now when you go and play teams. But no, kind of, I was definitely one of a kind in primary school and secondary school.
I'd say so. And when, I suppose, from a player pool perspective at the moment, like, what's the difference in numbers now to what it was maybe back when you were playing your failures? Like, is there, from a senior perspective almost, is there huge, much bigger pool there for you to pick from?
The underage game is fluctuated. When I was growing up, there'd have been a lot of hurling clubs, a hell of a lot of hurling clubs. There were 7 or 8 every age group, and now hurling has struggled in London the last few years, but the county board are doing massive work trying to get it back up and running. But the Gaelic footballers always seem to do very, very well with numbers. There's a lot of underage clubs now. Senior clubs, there's, I think there's 25, 26 clubs now. There's senior, intermediate, junior grades, and senior and intermediate have both got 8, and I think junior could have 9 or 10 now, because Parnells and St Kiernan's have recently entered completely homegrown British teams in junior level, as well as having a senior team. So clubs are getting to the stage that have had good underage structures. They're getting to the point where they've actually now got a pool of completely homegrown players at adult level, and they've got a junior team to facilitate that, those British-born guys' development, plus having a senior team, so that when they're ready to step up to play senior football, they can make that step up. So I think the pool is a lot more solid now. I'd say the numbers are similar to when I was growing up in terms of the football pool, but I'd say it's a lot more of a solid structure now, if that makes sense.
Yeah, big time. It sounds like there's been huge upskilling going on from grassroots right to junior, definitely, intermediate, senior, like you were saying. With that, though, comes a cost. Would you find that there's much aid there from the GAA, from HQ over in Dublin, or is a lot of it coming from fundraising from individual clubs, or is it a mix of both? Or because I can't imagine a trip, an under 14 failure trip over to Ireland every year is going to be cheap.
No, I honestly don't know the ins and outs of how all the trips are. I do know that Croke Park and Connacht Council have all committed here. They always emphasise how supportive Connacht Council and Croke Park have been. So, but there is a hell of a lot of fundraising needs to go on to facilitate those youth trips. But even with the underage clubs here, it's fully self-funded. I know, like within like Round Towers Club, my own club, for instance, we get no direct support from Croke Park as an overseas club. It's, you're running as a normal club, as every other club in Ireland would have to do. So players have to pay their subs every year. The club has to do maybe 2 or 3 fundraisers to make sure that they can get by year on year. But a lot of the clubs would have good playing memberships, and they'd have 1 or 2 people, I guess, as in all clubs, that would be looking after the fundraising and driving that side of things as well. But no, the county board always very supportive for funding underage trips. We're trying to put in place kind of a player development pathway that would see London really try and develop the under 15 to 17 structure to another level. But kind of, I was chatting to the finance operations guy, Stephen Lowen, over here, and the big thing would be kind of, how do we fund it? And there'll be an element of fundraising, and you'd hope an element of support, but it's the same in all counties and all clubs, I'd imagine.
Just on the player development side of things, I read that when you were interviewing for this position, that you went in with a very holistic approach and you were going from grassroots up and top down. Could you talk to us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, so if the pandemic's given me time to do anything, it's this. So it's something I'm passionate about, obviously having come through the London system myself. And the big thing is the drop away at 15 and above. And that's at all ages, and kind of looking at the club player and the county standard player. I guess from my role, I'm trying to improve the structure for the top end players in the county. Like, that's my job to look after that. But I think as a knock on, it would actually improve the retention rate of all players within the county. So at the moment, under 14 level, the county's got it bang on. We have a North London and a South London team, and both going back to compete in failures every year, both being very successful. So the county has got that right, without a shadow of a doubt. Under 15, we'd be looking to try and, again, try and keep a North and a South London element to it, but have the group then come collectively together and try and compete as a London team in a competition in Ireland. That has to be the ambition if lads are to stick at it. Because I couldn't imagine how you'd go as a 13, 14-year-old having that failure experience to then getting to 15 and not having that kind of end goal in sight or a competition that you're focusing towards. So I think that's very, very important. But small things like introducing boys of that age to conditioning programs, age-specific conditioning programs, that has to be done. Every other county in Ireland is getting guys in the mindset of how important conditioning is from the age of 14, 15 upwards. And it's something that we've not done in London yet. So it's something that has to start happening. How it happens is up for debate. And I'm sure it's going to take a lot of work and a lot of foresight from people. But it can be done. I've got every confidence it can be done. Then under 17 is the next step. And again, then you're trying to keep the guys playing. So the club element to it that I've suggested is, whilst the clubs also have their traditional championship style fixtures, here in London, there just seems to be kind of at every age group, one or two teams that would dominate and then two or three other teams that might be struggling at a particular age group. And what you find here is you could travel for maybe two and a half hours to get to a game, two and a half hours back. And if you're one of the teams that is either strong or weak, you're either hocking a team by 30 points or you're losing by 30 points. And travelling for 5 hours, losing or winning a game like that, and then coming back again, it's no good for either of the players. So something I've suggested that we need to look into is like blitz days, where all the teams come together maybe four or five times a year, play all the other teams. And if you are up against the team that you're going to destroy or you're going to get hockeyed by, it's a very short, sharp game. And actually the beating or the defeat is over very, very quickly. But actually, you're playing a kind of a whole range of games. Some you win, some you lose. And I think the enjoyment level and the retention level would be far, far greater. So the knock-on then for the clubs is they keep the guys playing. The knock-on for the county players is those guys are getting more games and exposure to the games at club level. And then I guess the next ambition is where do kids go from under 17? Because at the minute, we've just promoted two under 17s into the senior panel, but the jump for a 17-year-old to play senior inter-county football is mammoth. It's huge. So there's a London junior team at the moment who I've worked very closely with the manager this year to try and identify guys to filter through to him. But still, it's a big step up. So we would like to maybe get a London under 20 team in time, which would then have a platform 14s, 15s, 17s, 20s, junior, senior. There's a clear pathway then. Whereas over the last few years, whilst there's been real good ambition from previous senior managers, Kieran Dealy and Paul Coggins, to promote, it's been difficult for them to get their hands on a 17-year-old player who is ready to make that step up. So it would just be great to be getting players in who are ready, both mentally, physically, socially. They understand the expectation of what it means and what's involved playing for London football at senior level.
Yeah, ideally, would you like at under 17 level to be then competing in a minor championship in Ireland?
100%. Absolutely. Absolutely. And it has to be the ambition.
Is that a million miles away? Or how you would prefer to see that?
I think finances will play a big part in it. I really do. And I think you just need to have, you need to have a buy-in from all the parents and players over here as well, because there'd be no point in entering a team if parents and players aren't going to buy into that and commit to what it would take. There'd be no point in going back with a team that's underprepared. You'd have to be prepared for that. And the hope for me is the parents at 14, they're seeing that the preparation that goes in for failure, the kids are competing with kind of kids that are like, to compete with Division One teams in failure is no small achievement. It takes a lot of work. Why can't that work be replicated again at 15 and 17? It definitely can. And the talent is definitely here. It's about keeping them playing the game, keeping them enjoying playing the game, which will come with maybe slightly altered club structures. But then most importantly is having that end goal in sight. So if I was a 16-year-old again, and you thought you could play an under 17 Connacht Championship game, you'd give whatever commitment it took to put on that jersey on Connacht Championship day to play. Like, what an occasion it would be for a kid to play before a big senior game in an under 17 game. It would be unbelievable. So that's the hope. It's going to take a little bit of work, but I think now more than ever, we have to we have to look after our own players here and try and give them every other for the ages.
Michael, your coaching journey is something that fascinates me. I mean, you started off in the English non-league and you had your UEFA A license. I mean, tell us more about that. How did that come about?
So, got to 18 and, as I said, kind of the amount of games you'd be experiencing with Gaelic football would be very, very few. I took a part-time job at the time working for Fulham and ended up doing a bit for Fulham's academy. And I had a group of lads that they were playing at Hampton and Richmond at the time. And there was no kind of real pathway through for them. So an option came up to go to Redhill Football Club with that group of lads to play youth team football. And when we went there, their youth team hadn't won a game for 2 years. So kind of went there and just tried to put in a structure that would give the kids a chance to progress through the club. The club were at a low level at the time. And they were willing to give home-based players a chance, if you like to term it like that. So the group of lads I had were really good boys. We did very, very well at the youth team level. We went on two very good FA Youth Cup runs. Got a number of those boys through up into the first team. In 2011, then I became the assistant first team manager while still managing the youth team. At the turn of the year, the first team manager left to go to a rival club. And that had been, I think it was the 10th manager Redhill had lost in 10 years. Like they'd been chasing promotion and gone through managers. It was like a revolving door, and players as well. Like players were coming and going every year. So the chairman asked, would I take it on for the rest of the year? And I said, I would, see how it goes. So for the last few months of that year, I promoted a lot of the youth team boys just to see which of them would be ready to make the step from youth football to senior football. In the summer, then we sat down with the chairman and they said they wanted promotion kind of within 2 years. And that would have been into the Ryman South League, which would have been the highest level the club had been at. But we did it in the first year. Like, we got a group of lads together that summer. We got a few out of the youth team. We kept a few of the most committed lads on that had been in the previous year's first team. And then we went out and recruited, and we actually had a couple of really good Irish lads. Sean Kelly, who played Gaelic football for London. He moved back to Wexford. He played for Wexford Jews when he moved home. Night league, and so we had a bit of a Gaelic football touch to it as well. But we just got a group of lads together that had the right attitude, that are willing to work hard. We totally changed the way that the team trained and committed to the club. And we got promoted. We got 96 points. It was the record amount of points the club had got. We got promoted into the Ryman South. And it was brilliant. I'll never forget the day we got promoted. It was something else. It was brilliant. We went up into the Ryman South then, and we started unbelievably well. We had an incredible FA Cup run. We got to the last qualifying round. We were 90 minutes off playing Coventry City, which would have been dreamland for us. But we were fifth in the league at the time. We had this great FA Cup run, and we then didn't play a game at home for 4 months. The club hit the rocks. The pitch had huge problems. Chairman, secretary resigned from the club. A hell of a lot went on. And I look back now and I think I should have resigned, but kind of I stuck it out because I thought, this is good. Look, they gave me an opportunity. I'll stick with the club here. But it got mad. Like, myself and my assistant manager at the time, Mark Honus, we ended up becoming, like, we were forking the pitch. We were washing the kit. We were driving to sign players on. It was crazy. It was crazy stuff. Like, and it was stuff I look back now, but it was such a good grounding for management, what to expect when things go bad. The only thing I never expected to experience as a manager was a pandemic, I have to say. at that time, I'd gone the whole range of emotions. You'd gone from a year where you couldn't do anything wrong. You were winning week on week. You got promoted. And then the following year, you had a squad together. Your FA Cup run, you're on the crest of a wave. You're fifth in the league above. The club were even talking at that stage about getting the ground ready, because you have to meet certain ground regulations here to get promoted, getting the ground ready if we were going to do well for promotion. And then 4 months later, I'm fighting relegation with a change room full of 16, 17, 18-year-olds I've got on loan from big clubs because we had no budget to play players. It was just crazy. So at that stage, I left Redhill with kind of not so much a bad taste, but just I needed a break from soccer, because the demands of non-league football, like, you're working full-time. At the same time, you're trying to get your video analysis done, your opponents, keep touch with your own team, your management team, work out transport to games. But that season had been mentally draining because you ended up doing everything. And then I fell into Round Towers. Like, Round Towers had lost their senior manager, the chairman at the time contacted. So I went from Redhill to Round Towers in that year. And I really hadn't expected that call. But that was the journey. Soccer had brought me on. Had a lot of good years with soccer. Took kids abroad a number of times when they were growing up. And we had a lot of success. We had a few lads go on and play professionally. It was a wonderful experience. I wouldn't change the experience. But that last year was very, very tough.
And obviously, I mean, what sort of stuff would you, obviously you went to Round Towers after Redhill. I mean, what things as a coach would you bring over from soccer to Gaelic? Is there much of a crossover coaching-wise?
Yeah, I think I said it to someone recently. I think Gaelic football in the last 10 years has changed dramatically. I remember playing senior football and you'd get to the pitch and you'd maybe run around the outside of the pitch in 12-minute runs three times and then there'd be a ball thrown in and play a game, away you go, lads. I think across the length and breadth of Ireland, there's a lot more awareness of coaching now. There's a lot more willingness to share ideas. But even over here, clubs are taking things a lot more seriously. So, like, things Round Towers was in a mess, to be quite honest, kind of at senior level when I went back to manage them. Like, when I was playing senior football, you'd have just been underdogs every year at senior level. I remember probably playing in 3 or 4 relegation fights. So we just went in with a no-nonsense approach. I went in as the manager. Mike McGrath came in as a coach and selector. Tim O'Donoghue, one of the players' fathers, came in as a selector. And then the committee were very, very supportive. And we just decided to change the approach and get the players respecting the club, respecting themselves, and actually deciding as a collective, if we focus, we could actually do something. And it was the first year, I think, in 2 or 3 years, that first year we were in, that they didn't have to play a relegation game in the senior level. And then we ended up getting to 3 semi-finals of the senior championship in a row, which was a massive achievement for us, because the club's down in South London, so we're a long way away from, like, the hub of London and where the traditional big clubs like Tyrconnell Gaels, St Kiernan's, the clubs like that, they can attract kind of players living within the city, whereas we would kind of rely on lads purely living in South London. So it was a great achievement. There's a really good group there. And look, we last 4 years, that group of players have really brought the club to another level.
Yeah. As a coach now, a Gaelic football coach, what would be your philosophy or what your kind of style? What style of play do you like to implement?
I think it's horses for courses. Depends who you're playing and when you're playing. I would always be a big believer in encouraging players to be confident on the ball. Like, I want every player to be confident. If they're in a position to get on the ball, I want them to be on the ball. And if they can't be on the ball, I'm very, very hot on the team, working hard for each other, understanding their roles defensively, and kind of players realising that all times they can affect the game, whether the team is on the attack or whether the team is defending. But very much horses for courses, and kind of I've always tried to be tactically adaptable with the teams, because 1 week you might be able to play a real expansive style of football against the team who play an expansive style of football. Then you might come up against the team that play a very, very defensive style of football, and you have to have a different way of breaking that down and approaching them games. So, definitely, I think, and that's where the tactical side of Gaelic football has really, really improved in the last few years across all levels, that coaches have to kind of coach different styles of play into their players. They have to improve training structure so that when you do go out and you're faced with 13 men camped inside the 45, your team aren't going to freeze and just start kicking the ball inside to the small square and get gobbled up. Actually, they're confident withdrawing, getting out behind the ball, running at teams. And like I said, some days you'll play against the team that leave you man for man inside the inside line, and at the same time your team are then tactically cute enough to realise we can deliver the ball early today. So I wouldn't say I've got one style, but I try and encourage the lads to be as confident as they can be in every situation.
Yeah, and these things can take time to bed in. Obviously, it hasn't been a great start to the league for you guys. Is that because you guys are trying to, like you were saying, trying to adapt to certain ways? And a lot of it can be to do with the players, your own personal personnel, who you guys have. So are you very much, is it a blank sheet? Are you starting with something completely new from previous management? Or is it...
No, we kept a fair proportion of last year's squad on this year with London. Pre-season actually went really well. When we got together in November, December, we were training at a place called Grasshoppers, which is, it's the, over here, unfortunately, there's no floodlit Gaelic football pitches. So the best you can get is a floodlit rugby pitch. So we got to Grasshoppers, which I believe Sky Sports funded because they actually bought Grasshopper's old pitch and Sky Sports built a new facility for them. So it is state of the art. So we were on their grass pitches and we were in a really good place going into Christmas. Like pre-season had gone well. Lads were getting to a very, very good level of fitness. We'd had a lot of football work done and we were fairly settled. On the 23rd of December, myself and the liaison officer got a call from the rugby club and they said, we can't have you back in January. And the pitches had been damaged by the weather over here. We had really bad weather in December. So they said, you need to find a new venue. So the whole Christmas period was spent trying to get a venue, which you can imagine there's no one picking up the phone between Christmas and New Year. We didn't secure the pitch until January the 2nd. We secured the pitch finally for January the 4th return. And we had to move to a rugby field, which was, in comparison to Grasshoppers, preparation for that 4 weeks leading up to Sligo was not where you would like it to be, but we made the best of it. We definitely made the best of it, and we felt we were still in a good position going into the Sligo game. But I'll just give you an example. On the pitch we were on, you could only shoot one way properly, because if you kicked up the other end, if the ball went over the bar, it was going into a field you couldn't have access to get the ball. So that's just a small example of one of the things we had to think about when we were designing training sessions. Like if it's a forwards-based session, we're playing that way. If it's a backs-based session, we're going that way. But we did. We felt we were in a good place going into the Sligo game. And the result was upsetting and demoralising. But at the same time, we looked at the video back when you took 24 hours to breathe. Actually, we played well. The scores, like, there was no difference in the amount of scores. It was just they nicked two fluky goals, which knocked the confidence of the lads without a doubt. That week, we then got a call to say, come back to Grasshoppers. So we were delighted. We did. So for the Limerick and Antrim games, they were the only two games in the league where we actually got to train where we wanted to train. We were able to extend the width of the pitch to the width of what Gaelic football fields were. Obviously restricted lengthwise to a rugby field, but we were in a really good place. And Limerick and Antrim, there was a kick of the ball between the teams. We got beat by a point by Limerick and three by Antrim. And we put up unbelievably good performances. Unfortunately, then we lost the training pitch again. And we ended up on half a rugby pitch then for the rest of the league. We were training on half a rugby field, half a 3G rugby pitch, with 34, 35 lads. And if anyone had been there, it would have made you been framed. Like, we had to get the keepers taking kickouts from behind a try-scoring zone and telling them to avoid the rugby posts so that we could get the ball to drop on the 40. Stuff like this that you'd never have thought about. And if it happens next year, you'd be in a better place. You'd be kind of ready to adapt quicker. But we'd come off the back of two brilliant performances and then just we couldn't train right again for Wexford and Wicklow. And it showed in the performances. And I just don't think that group of lads really got to do themselves justice. And I think they know that as well. And I'd be very, very confident we're going to stick together as a group. You always lose a few in London with lads kind of that are here for work or girlfriends, whatever it might be, before going home. But we've got a good number of English-born boys there. We have a good group of Irish lads, and I think they know as well they didn't do themselves justice. I know they didn't. And if we got a full season of training properly, it would be a different case. The other thing we were unfortunate with was Killian Butler, who was probably the star player in the Galway game last year. He scored 1-3, 1-4 against Galway. He was suspended for 48 weeks, and he wasn't eligible until the Wicklow game. And he came back against Wicklow and scored 1-6. Having not played any game. So I look back and think, had we had Killian against Limerick and Antrim, would it have got us over the line? Definitely. If he'd scored even half of that in both those games, we'd have won the games. We also lost Conor Doran. We couldn't use Conor Doran this year. Unfortunately, he went home. So we were just a little bit unfortunate, I think. Had we trained properly and we'd had Killian available as probably our marquee inside forward,
What did he do that he got 48 weeks?
Unfortunately, he played in America last year. And he got a 48-week ban. I just think there was an issue with the paperwork. I don't think Killian did anything like overly wrong as such. He went to America, believe the paperwork was slightly wrong, and he got 48 weeks. But he was back for the Wicklow game, and he was a huge lift to us. I just think if we trained properly and we'd had the full panel available, it would have been a different situation. The other thing I forgot to say was Marcus Mangan committed to the county this year. Marcus had been on Kerry squads going back for a few years. And Marcus was a huge player that we went after to convince to play for the county, and he committed. He was in a brilliant place going into the Sligo game, and completely innocuous. He got an elbow in his head at training, doing a drill early in the session the last night before Sligo, split his head, and he was gone for 3 weeks with concussion, so we didn't have Marcus for a few games either. So we just had a little bit of bad luck this year. The preparation was as good as it could have been. The county board were very, very supportive. We had a great group of lads, real good backroom staff. Like, I've got a brilliant, brilliant staff with me. And I think next year we'll be ready to do ourselves justice if things fall into place a little bit better.
That's great. It seems like the structures are really, really positive over there. It's like that training scenario is unbelievable. Like, it's unbelievable. You wouldn't get it at junior level. Anything over here almost, you know.
It's not. It's like the thing is the county board give you whatever they can kind of get, but there just is not a floodlit Gaelic football pitch here, which is it's no one's fault. It's something that obviously has to be addressed if we want this structure to the top end to improve. But I remember laughing, like, I read Ricey McMenamin saying Fermanagh had to go across to Tyrone to get a training pitch. I felt like I said, we'd love a training pitch. We've got nowhere to train. But look, it's one of them things that I'm a great believer you can learn from those situations, and we would definitely adapt a small bit quicker next year if the same thing did happen. But fingers crossed it won't happen.
Are there plans to maybe build? I know there's a lot of money spent on the development of Royston not so long ago, and looks fantastic. Really, really good sort of centre for you guys. But plans to develop a floodlight pitch?
They've spoken about it, and it's obviously something that is in the pipeline. There's no concrete location in place. There's no concrete plan in place just yet. But you only have to look at what the county board did and the facility that Ryslip is to know that if they can get kind of everything in place, it will be an outstanding facility we do have. I'd like to hope it might be in my time, but look, you just don't know. You'd love to be able to work in your own centre. I mean, we went back to Louth for a challenge in January, and they've got their place in Darver, and I've seen Tyrone's up in Galbally, which is Gavahi, which is incredible. You've seen all the different ones, but Louth it's basic, but it's everything you need. It's got the change rooms, the gym facilities, the dining facilities, and the number of pitches. And that's all any team needs to be able to compete on a level playing field, even down to Division 4.
Yeah, it'd be a huge boost for you guys. After Royce is now being sorted out, pretty much, that'd be the next step. Because it sounds like you have your structures in place. Hopefully, with that, on top of that, the numbers will grow as well organically on the back of success, if you can get into it. Like, but it just, the pathway seems so positive at the moment. It's just about those little things. Then it'll take time maybe to get there, but a huge admiration for the fact that now with Royslip, it's not only what traditionally it was going back decades, a centre for Irish people, it's now a centre for London people because of what you guys have done, because you brought in the Indigenous players.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, and it really is, and that's where you just want, I think you want every kid to aspire to play in Royslip, be it for their club or be it for their county. You want them to aspire to play on that pitch. Goes back to the small player pathway, something I've said, open the doors to Ryslip just for one weekend a year for every club player at every age to play a blitz in Ryslip or a game in Ryslip. And it would just give them that kind of cherry to chase after. But Ryslip
is it not available readily to you guys, or what's the situation there?
No, it's definitely available. I just think the pitch is only a few years old. So in the first couple of years, they had to just watch how many games were being played on that pitch. And then obviously, you get to a time of year and there's a real premium. Look, every team is playing. And when you've got men's football, intermediate, junior, senior, hurling, underage football, like, they open the doors to ladies football. The county board open it to as many people as they can. I just think if they could open it to all underage teams just for one weekend every year as well, I think it would be another little thing that kids would aspire. Because I have no doubt that kids come to games out there with their parents to watch senior teams, or they come to the Connacht Championship Day. And I know I as a kid would have thought, I wish I could play on that pitch. So my opinion is give them a chance to play on that pitch and see, can they grow?
You mentioned your relationship with Martin McGrath earlier. It must be very strong. He's in with you as the assistant now. Is that, am I right in saying?
Yeah, I've known Martin since 2008. I'd call it, look, he's a great sidekick, but I'd call him a great friend as well. Like, we just clicked when we first met. He was He was a London development officer when he first came over for a few months, and I was working in schools for around 2 hours trying to get kids on board. That was kind of the first step for me, trying to get kids of different backgrounds playing. So I met Martin that way, then found out obviously he'd done what he had done with Mayo and achieved great success in his career back in Ireland. So I got Martin involved initially with me at Red Hill.
I was curious to ask you more about is, I mean, Irish-born players, when they come over to London, is it hard for them to commit to the inter-county panel? Would that be a challenge you might have as a manager?
It's a tough one. So I think the reason guys come to London is they're here for work, or they're here for maybe they're like they've met their wife or the girlfriend, boyfriend, whatever it may be. London's brought them over here for a reason, and it never tends to be they're here for football or they're here because they want to play for London. So you get these guys that come into London, they're great footballers, and it's about then selling them the kind of the dream, or why should they play for London? Because the travel that it takes here and what we have to do to play National League games away, it's a massive, massive commitment. Like an away game for us, it's a full weekend gone. That's 6 weekends you're saying to them, look, you're going to be away from London, away from kind of your social time. And then in the week as well, you're saying to them, 2 nights on the pitch, we need you to do a gym session as well. It's a big commitment. And some of the guys have come from playing inter-county football in Ireland, and you find at first they might just want a break when they come to London if their career is their focus. So, look, this year we had 2 or 3 knockbacks that we'd like to be on the panel, but they just said they couldn't commit to it. And unfortunately, you just have to kind of accept that. And travel over here is a massive thing. You could travel from Dublin to Wexford in the time that you would travel 20 miles in London. So it might not seem a huge distance on paper where you're saying for the lads to get to training, but actually it's tough. Like the commute, even for me and Martin, we'd hop in the car at 3:30 after school finishes. We might not get to training some nights till 6:15. Like you'd be in the car for the guts of 3 hours to do a 25, 30 mile journey. And it's just part and parcel of London life. If you're at one end of London, getting to the other side of London is tough. It's not like doing that same mileage in Ireland. It's completely different. So there's that to get over as well. But I can't speak highly enough for the lads who are Irish born, that have been with us this year and obviously years gone by. They give great commitment to play for London. It's tough. Being an inter-county footballer is tough on the whole for every county. But for London, you've just got that added thing where you're saying to guys, do you know what, like a number of weekends here, you are giving up your life. So I've got nothing but admiration for the guys that do rowing.
Absolutely. Genie Mac, that's some trek. And I suppose going forward, I mean, the GAA have set out the roadmap for getting back to playing football. I mean, do you have to adhere to what the British government advises, or do you follow the GAA guidelines?
So we're waiting at the moment for some confirmation. So the roadmap was obviously released. And I believe the provincial council over here, they're meeting to discuss kind of where can they follow those guidelines to, following the British guidelines, Scottish guidelines. And obviously then they've got a few clubs in Wales, I believe, playing men's and ladies football as well. So we've not had anything confirmed to us yet. If we can get back on the 29th of June, doing small group training for the clubs, but we should hear in the next couple of days, but it will be based on British government guidelines. So we've just got to wait and see when Britain say contact sports can resume. I guess the tricky thing is the British government aren't going to say when they'll allow Gaelic football back. It's going to be the only tricky thing. And I guess the closest thing that we could compare it to for Gaelic football clubs is grassroots soccer or non-league soccer. Whenever they say that soccer teams can get back to full contact training, I guess that would be the nearest thing that they could look towards. But we've not heard anything definite yet.
And do you hope to be involved in the championship when it comes around?
Definitely. Look, from the outset, Connacht and Croke Park always said they wanted all the counties to be involved. They said they wouldn't want to run a championship if it meant any counties would miss out. But from the outset, I was kind of very clear in my own mind that it could just be a year. New York and ourselves weren't going to be involved because of the flight issue. It would have to be a flight for both of us or our opponents. So look, we would desperately love to be involved. Absolutely. Every player on that panel would want to play championship football. Us as a management team would want to challenge ourselves in a championship situation. And London as a whole rely on that game. It's a huge, huge day for the county, for expats, for people that grow up playing football here. committee members, whatever it may be, it's a massive day and it's a wonderful occasion, let alone the football match. It is a wonderful occasion for London. So I do still hope that we can be a part of the Championship and that game is in Ryslip.
I know there's been some talk as well about, I suppose, what sort of Championship it's going to be. Do you think it'll be just the normal province, or do you think it'll be maybe just a knockout system, or how do you think it's going to go?
I think it will be the traditional provincial Championship, but I think it will be knockout. So probably the four provincial winners will end up in an All-Ireland semi-final. That's the way I think it could go. I doubt they'll go to a complete open draw, because there was a bit of chat last week. I saw they were saying that the provincial Championship is still very, very strong in a number of provinces. I like the provincial Championships as a spectacle when you're watching games from other provinces. I mean, the Ulster Championship is fierce. It's fierce. And when you go to those games, the atmosphere is electric. And I don't think they'd get the same buzz of a game if it was Tyrone versus Waterford, as they would like Tyrone and Derry, Tyrone and Armagh. So I think they'd be keen to keep the provincial Championships this year.
I suppose, what is the future you see for London football going forward, obviously over the next few years? What are your hopes and aspirations as the county manager to, I suppose, what do you want? What success are you looking for?
Look, we would like to compete in every game in Division 4 as best we can. I'd be lying if I said we didn't want to win every game. You want to go into every game to try and win it, but you have to be realistic as well. And one thing I learned this year is, I think until we have a training centre, we're always going to hit maybe small glitches in the road here. But getting all we can do is have the lads ready to cross the white line. Like, we have them 100% ready. You can do no more. So that will be our first thing to focus on next year, is how can we get the best players with the group? Can we retain this group mainly and maybe add one or two lads that come to light this year? Are there any underage players that we can blood into that panel? But going back to it, I'd like to keep this panel together, because they've been a dream to work with. They've been brilliant. They've bought into everything. We'll improve it as best we can, because obviously it's a learning experience. There's always things you can improve. And look, there was Limerick and Antrim, ironically, I think, were the two teams that would end up getting promoted out of Division 4. Wexford were knocking very, very close. But we have to take great heart from the fact they're the two games where we ran the teams the closest, and there was literally a kick of the ball between us. Limerick, we missed one of our inside forwards. He caught a mark, and the free, it was a very, very kickable free. Had he kicked that, it would have been a level game with 2 minutes to go. If we turned the kick over out, we could have won the game. So it was such a narrow defeat. And Limerick were probably the most impressive team we played this year. I thought they were the most organised, most resilient team, albeit they were the ones that kind of we were closest to. So we have to take heart from that. I'd like to think we can have a good Division 4 campaign next year, our preparation. And then for the Championship, look, I remember the summer of 2013 and what that London team did for the county, getting to a Connacht final. You'd love to hope that a team one day could emulate that. But obviously that year they played Sligo in Ryslip and then Leitrim. They had an excellent team. They also had a good draw as well. Like, we've got Roscommon this year, Mayo next year. You have to be realistic. They're very, very strong teams with great tradition, Roscommon reigning Connacht champions. But at the same time, then you look at the performance we put up against Galway last year. So it can be done. It definitely can be done.
Michael, that was a great chat. Thanks very much for coming on. Appreciate it. And best of luck for the rest of the year.
Thanks for listening in, and don't forget that you can follow the Mick and Mac GAA Football Podcast on Instagram, Twitter, and we are on Spotify, as well as all other podcast platforms.